everybody, and welcome back for another episode of Miss Nigan Isquiak. I am Kayla, one of your favorite Métis aunties, and I am here today with my co-host.
Another favorite Métis auntie. I'm Tanya, and we're here with...
the best Métis auntie, Sheila.
Uh-oh, are we going to have a... Jeez,
we're going to have an Métis auntie
showdown. Jeez.
There you go.
just kidding. And our special guest today...
is Richard Van Camp. Thank you so much for having me. Masi Cho.
Hey, thanks for coming.
Well, my pleasure.
All right, Richard, do you want to introduce yourself in the way that you do it?
Sure. Dante. Sagya Masi, my friends, thank you very much for having me. My name is Richard Van Camp. I was born and raised in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, the Métis capital of the Northwest Territories, Treaty 8 country. I was born in 1971. I am 49 years old. I'm halfway home, baby. And I live in Treaty 6 country in Edmonton, and I am married to the love of my life, Kiwi Martin, and we have the most beautiful little boy, and his name is Idzazi Van Camp, and he is 6 in grade 1, and we love him very much, and I love my wife, and I love my life, and I'm so grateful to be here. This is just a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege, and I wanted to just open a little, I'm a Virgo, a little bossy, but I want to know, first of all, who you are, because we've never really met. But also, how are you getting through the pandemic? We're 9-10 months into this. Who are you? Where are you from? And what are you doing to get through the day? Are you clawing through each day? Are you rolling through each day? Are you sliding? Are you white knuckling it? What is going on? How are you getting through it? Let's check in, because our listeners may be able to pick up a couple of cool things and say, you know what? These were the three coolest aunties ever, and they just saved my life because they gave me the know-how. Who wants to start?
I'm going to volunteer Kayla because you're on my list. Let's follow protocol here.
All right. Okay. So my name is Kayla Larson. I am originally from Treaty 6 territory. I was born in Rocky Mountain House. However, I was raised in a small town just east of Edmonton called Tofield, Alberta. I'm an only child and a Capricorn, so that might tell you a lot about my personality. However, I am now relocated to Vancouver. I've been here since August, living in Vancouver. I definitely miss the prairies in the wintertime right now. It's weird to see flowers still blooming for me. So I'm in Vancouver currently without my husband. My husband's still in Alberta, but he will be relocating here in January, and his name is Eric. We've been married since we were 18 years old. So we're having our 15-year wedding anniversary this year. And I am out here with my other love of my life, who is my cat. I couldn't leave him back in Alberta. I had to bring my cat with me while I relocated here by myself. And I have a almost 20-pound farm cat named Spud, and he is the biggest baby ever. And he's keeping me sane while I'm here in Vancouver by myself on the soft lockdown while we're here. But pretty much for kind of self-care and, being in Vancouver, I think I'm really close to the seawall. I'm really close to the water. So I do go for lots of walks. I listen to my music really loud while walking around the seawall, which is probably not good, especially at night and I'm by myself there. But I listen to music really loud and just kind of like let it out. Being with the cat's really good. And I'm throwing myself back into watching like 90s TV shows like Dawson's Creek, Moesha, Sister, Sister. So I have like been watching all of those. And then also I've been working a lot. I probably shouldn't do this, but I often continue just to work after work hours and even on the weekends, as it's just occupying my time while I'm here. So the other day I literally just like stayed on after work hours and requested books for the library to purchase because I can't go shopping. So it's fulfilling my shopping needs. So yeah, that's what I'm doing, you know, and I'm going to go next to Sheila because she's on the, you know, passing it around.
Yeah. Zoom protocol, right? We're modern like that. Yeah, it's weird. Like I moved home March 10th or no. Yeah. March 10th, I drove home from Edmonton to Saskatoon. So it's been really weird, like getting everything into my apartment as like everything was like shutting down, and like, so that was a little bit bizarre. It's been a soft landing though, because my parents are still here and like they are quite helpful for me as an immune compromised person, learning how to navigate working in public service in a global pandemic. I smoke a shitload of weed. That's how I've been coping. I sleep a lot, and I like, honestly, like the first month, I was just stoned to the bone. So that's always a good time. Because if you remember back in the day when you used to be able to smoke weed with your friends and being like, oh man, guys, in April of 2020, it's gonna be 420 for a whole month. And like, oh fuck, that's gonna be sweet. Well, I did that by myself. So yeah, I made up for it. And then so I did that. And then on April 21st, I like slid into my boyfriend's DMs on Instagram, because I was like, okay, I've been like stoned for a while. Maybe I should find a person. And then that's what I did. And then he became my boyfriend. And that's so cute and gross. And I adopted two bonded sisters, little cats. Their names are Abby and Alana, of course. Like, stoner librarian, like, has, like, stoner cats, like, duh. But they're, like, the best. And, like, I'll be, like, so mad at them for, like, scratching the shit out of my couch. And then, like, I'll go into, like, the next room and find them, like, cuddling. And it's like, oh, I love you, you little idiots. And I have, like, a ton of plants around me. Like, I just kind of went nuts and, like, became a planty over this summer. And, yeah, I just, like, make food. Not like really involved stuff, but like for me, that's like a thing I can control, is like I can control like my meal plans, and like I can do the dishes, and I can like plan out what we're gonna eat, like what's in my freezer, what's in my boyfriend's freezer, what we're gonna do in that way. And like, yeah, so I smoke weed and like make food and listen to podcasts. I wish I was more I'm not really contributing a lot to society right now, but that's what I'm doing. So, yeah. Tanya, what are you doing?
Sheila, you're feeding the cannabis industry. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's
there
assuming.
There's no economy.
Yeah.
Also, for the record, I do not sound like that when I'm high.
Oh, I do.
I am the ultimate cancer, and I just want to talk about feelings and, like, dissect myself all day long.
Yeah, you do.
Yes,
I'm a Gemini.
Like, yeah, let's get down with our empathic selves here. But for me, I was born in Winnipeg. My family comes from Red River, actually from a small Métis village up north of Winnipeg called St. Ambrose. And actually, there's a painting right behind me. And that's a painting of the birch trees that were in between my mom's place where she grew up and her grandparents' place. So there you go. I lived in Alberta. I lived in BC as well, but I've been living here in Edmonton for about 13 years. I have two kids and they are the loves of my life. I love them so much. My daughter is 6. Her name is Dylan. She's actually, she has been diagnosed with a condition called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and also cerebral palsy. So I spend a lot of time taking her to doctor's appointments and doing that kind of stuff. My son is 5. His name is Milo, and he is the ultimate Métis kid, causing trouble, destroying and, like, you know, lighting matches wherever he goes. And I love his spirit so much. I just want to embrace that. And just, he will become the positive troublemaker, I think, in the future, which is perfect. For the pandemic, I mean, the pandemic has been a very different experience for me. Before the pandemic really broke out, I got separated from my ex-husband, and we were together for about, I can't even remember, like 10 to 12 years, something like that. So I went through like more of a personal journey, going through therapy and stuff like that, because I didn't want to end up in a similar boat, in a similar relationship. I don't want to get too much into that, but I've been doing lots of self-journey and going through like mental health. We were talking about that. I'm diagnosed with PTSD and also severe depression. So I've been like taking this pandemic time to basically just like go through my childhood trauma. And it has been an exhausting experience, but I'm so much looking forward to, I can see the difference in myself just going through all of the therapy every single week. And I've been doing, it's called EMDR, which is like a, I don't know, it's almost like a hypnosis therapy, which is good because it's drawing out a lot of memories that my brain just totally gotten rid of. It's a weird, bizarre experience. I'm starting to feel like my life is like this psychological thriller where all these memories are starting to pop up out of nowhere. But it's been really fun, weirdly enough. But in April also, I found love in the time of COVID. I started seeing and going on social distancing dates with my current partner, actually. We've been together for about 8 months now, and we went on social distancing dates. We talked on the phone quite a bit, and then we quarantined ourselves until we could finally meet each other, and it was such a very, like, awesome romantic experience. And now, like, because of the new COVID restrictions, he is, like, living with me, so that's been really weird and fun, but he's a really great partner. So shout out to him. He might be listening to this later on. Love him so much. Otherwise, thanks for my mental health. I've been reading a lot of sexy comic books, like this one called Smut Peddler. I've really gotten into them. I love sex positive comic books and different types of relationships that are represented in comic book form. That's the stuff that I read. I'm not a big novel reader. So this has been getting me through all of this weirdness. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. How about you, Richard? How are you surviving the pandemic? What are your mental health tips?
Well, Musi Cho, I want to thank you all for sharing your truths with us and with me. So a couple of questions. Sheila, are you currently stoned right now?
No. No, I'm not.
Why aren't you?
Because I wanted to be quicker. I'm a professional, Richard.
Okay, I'm not, so I
yeah
just, okay
yeah I am currently okay. Not stoned.
Next time we do this, can everybody do what you need to do, and let's just all show up and
yeah, of course,
have the chat of a lifetime.
That would be awesome.
Wow. So Tanya, thanks for talking about your sex positive comics. And I didn't know you lived in Edmonton. Did I ever send you Kiss Me Deadly, my sex
I have
health
that
comic?
One. Yes, yeah, that, I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, we gave 10,000 comics away for free all over the Northwest Territories to teenagers. And I think it's one of my funniest anythings because we had the worst sexual health talk in the history of mammals in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. And did I ever tell you what happened? We had a minister show up. We had our guidance counselor. We had the principal. And they passed the toque. Did I tell you about this?
No.
No.
Oh, it was the worst. It's so bad, it's funny. But basically, the ladies got the gym at PWK High for 3 hours, and there was a trampoline. They got the popcorn machine from the church, and they got to watch movies. And to this day, it was the code. They walked to this day. I'm like, so when you guys got your, they're like, no, we'll never tell you what we learned in those 3 hours. But when we walked out, we were goddesses because we were born with every egg we're ever going to need. Okay. And you don't have fallopians. We got fallopians. And we got the drafting room where the men's hockey team stored their hockey bags. So when we walked into the drafting room, it just smelled like ball sweat and nachos and hot scalp and testicle juice and bonch. Like, it's not like a big wet toque, okay? And it was just, we were promised so many things. It was 3 hours where we were going to learn about the women's and sensuality and the Kumasatra and, you know, just how to please everybody sexually. And we didn't get that at all. It was our principal, our guidance counselor, an actual minister who was praying for us out loud. He was doing the rosary because he did not want this talk to happen. And we were all allowed to write down as many questions as we wanted. We were promised that anything went, that you know, many of them were fathers. You know, there's probably nothing that could surprise them. And then they passed this toque around, and we were all supposed to take our cootie catcher. Remember cootie catchers where you fold the pages? I think we were all asking basically the same questions, but we all put our cootie catcher questions into this stinky toque that had been used for 10 years with the sex talk. And then our principal, our guidance counselor, and the minister all took turns, and they were supposed to answer, but they actually sent us to detention. They just said that these were the most bizarre, insane, and illegal questions that anyone had ever. And we learned later that they did this every year. This was their thing, so that they wouldn't have to give us the sex talk. And I remember being sent to detention, and I remember being furious. I think I was in grade 8, and I just to be promised so much that we were going to be welcomed into the tribe of man and to adulthood and to have a safe space to ask the questions you wanted to ask, and then to be betrayed and sent to, you know, the library in detention. And you know, when you're a teenager and you're strong until you see your mom, and then she asks the one question, like, so how was your sex talk today, my boy? And I started crying. I lost it. I got histrionic. And then she called our principal and let him have it. And then the next morning there was an assembly at PWK High, and the public health nurse got on stage with slides that she had been taking. And she, like, remember a long time ago, the 35 millimeter tray of slides. Mm-hmm. And so she had this bazooka like projector. She had the screen set up. And I remember she just said, and we were there with the women. We were there with the ladies. And we're like, why are they here? We're supposed to be learning about them. They don't need to be in the room, right? But this was a school assembly, and the public health nurse said, I understand somebody here wanted a real sex talk. And I'm here to tell you, I've been a public health nurse in your community for a number of years, and you are the sexually transmitted capital of Canada, sexually transmitted infection capital of Canada. So everybody looked at someone on your right. So I looked at my right. It was my buddy James. He's like, that person is probably going to get an STI. Look to somebody on your left. And then I remember it was my buddy Leslie. He's like, what? And it's like, that person's probably going to get an STI. Now everybody hold up an imaginary mirror. And so we all held up this imaginary mirror, which was our hand. You're probably going to get an STI in your lifetime. And we were like, what? Are you kidding? What? And that's how this talk started. And she goes, I have been taking pictures for the past couple of years in your community. And I think if you want to learn about sex, we should start with talking about STIs like chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis and anal warts and cheesy white discharges. So why don't we start with some slides? And she hit the slide projector. And I remember I hope to God these weren't my fellow Fort Smithers, because unfortunately these were battle damaged organs. And it was just disgusting.
Oh my God.
She kept flipping through the slides and she was like, can you smell the pus? Because every day when I go home, I smell pus. I forget to wash my hands sometimes and I'm eating. And yeah, you know, and so she's going through and she keeps hitting these slides. They keep getting more grotesque, more monstrous, more bulbous, more leaky. And she's like, how'd you like that on a cracker? How'd you like that on a cracker? How'd you like that on a cracker? Can you smell the pus? I can smell the pus. Why aren't you smelling the pus? Smell the pus. And we were dry heaving. I could still see it. I won't get into it, but it was just, it was that revulsion and the fear. And that's why we were all virgins into our 40s, because we were just so, we didn't want the dose. I don't want the dose, because we got the triple cocktail here. She talked about you don't just get the chlamydia. You get the gonorrhea and the SIF. You're going to get the drip, right? We just call it the drip. It's also known as the dose. And nobody wanted the dose. To this day, it's like, I don't want the dose. Please, I don't want the dose. Why do I got to get the dose? Do I pay my taxes? Right? So anyways, as time went on, when I was teaching at UBC, a young publisher named Sean Muir was starting a company called the Healthy Aboriginal Network. It's since been changed to the Indigenous Creators Studio. And you can actually read Kiss Me Deadly for free. It's online, along with my comic with Steve Sanderson called Path of the Warrior, which is about gang violence prevention. So the sexual health comic book I wrote with Chris Ochter, who's Haida, it's called Kiss Me Deadly. And I'm really proud we gave 10,000 copies away for free. And how that started was Sean Muir looked at me one day and he said, listen, we've got some funding. You've helped Steve with his comics as his editor. Is there a story that you would like to write? And I was like, hell yes. I want to write the story that I wish I would have inherited in grades 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 about it's okay to be sensual. It's okay to know who or what you are right now. It's okay to, we're sexual beings. And I really wanted to challenge the medicine wheel, because the medicine wheel doesn't talk about sensuality or sexuality. And if we don't talk about it, sex is going to continue to be used as a weapon of shame and a weapon in our communities. And so I'm really proud of working with Sean Muir and Chris Ochter. I think that Kiss Me Deadly is such a beautiful comic book because it covers many things. It's about being a young man that is curious on the internet, rightfully so. Unfortunately, he's using his grandparents' computer and it keeps crashing. And one day an older cousin comes by and fixes Mushman Cookham's or Etsy and Etsy's computer and has to explain to the grandfather, look, it's not you that's crashing it. It's actually your grandson. So he has to give his grandson the talk. And I'm really proud of what the grandfather says, because it's not about shame. It's just about responsibility and understanding many things. And I just thought it was so beautiful. It's also about two teenagers, Clint and Mona, who are together, but they break up and they get back together. And then as they're getting ready to fool around, they both admit that they had unprotected sex over the summer and that they should probably go get tested. So I had a couple of questions. My question is, if you're in a small community and your mom is the CHR or your auntie answers the phone at the health center, or if you know the janitors are going through the health records at night and telling people who has AIDS or HIV positive or COVID or gonorrhea or SIF, et cetera, then why would you go if there's already so much shame about your body? And I think this is why we lose so many of our young people to the city, because the community is there and the support is in the city rather than our own communities. So I really wanted to address that in Kiss Me Deadly. So I'm glad you have it. And if you don't have it, just let me know in the email, my dear co-host, and then I'll just mail you all copies, because we're really proud of Kiss Me Deadly. Actually, you can read it for free. You don't need copies. It cost me $5 to mail it to you, plus shipping and handling. You kidding me? We talk about coping mechanisms.
I totally get what you mean about like the shame in a small town. Like I grew up in a town of like a little bit like 1200 people. I think they're closer to 2 now, but my mom was a nurse. So I grew up knowing like a lot about health and like body positivity and what's normal with your body, what's not. Also like scared straight from just about anything because my mom was a nurse. However, there was that big like stigma is because my mom did work at the hospital in Tofield for a while. And it was like, if I went to the hospital, the one doctor in town was my really good friend at the time's dad. So if you had to go for a pap smear or anything like that, it's like your best friend's dad looking at your coochie, which was just super awkward as a teenager for me. And if I had to go to the emergency or anything like that, it was that my mom might be there or like some of my mom's friends. And for me, just because it was so small, it's also like there is supposed to be confidentiality, but you know, in small town, that's not a thing. They're definitely going to rat me out. And that totally happened one time. I had an infected belly button piercing. I went to the hospital and they totally ratted me out to my parents because they didn't know. So that was the thing. But I understand like the small town and the stigma about like, especially sexual health, that's a big one in small towns.
I was going to say a lot of us have experienced that kind of like sexual abuse, unfortunately. Actually just went through the sexual assault center. They have an all Indigenous women program and it was really, really good. And they go through traditional teachings with an elder for about 12 weeks. And it was really super positive. So for listeners, I will put the, I'll put the link in the show notes. So if people want to access that program, it's super positive. And yeah, and then you can talk to and realize that you're not alone, because a lot of us are really in need of reclaiming our sexuality.
I was just going to say, I think also if you're from a small town and you're a really horrible lover, like you're a biter and you just, you lose control and you just start biting, or you're just really clumsy and you don't really know how to kiss. So you just want to lick somebody's face all the time, right? Word gets out. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Why don't we'll put the comic in the liner notes. I didn't know you could do that. You're obviously very sophisticated, but I got to just check in real quick about self-care. So here's what I think. This is what we do every day. So we do vitamin B, vitamin D, acidophilus, because we got to get our gut fauna up. I think last time we visited, I talked about you need three meme buddies. And what I mean by meme buddies, my job every day is to make Dusty Camps and Kamloops, Joel Duffy, wherever he is, whether he's in St. Albert, Edmonton, or Fort McMurray working, and then my dear friend Leanne Padgett in Vancouver, who is hilarious. They're all three are hilarious. My job all day, every day, is to make those three laugh. So I'm always hunting on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for the ultimate meme or the screenshot. And then they, in turn, their whole role throughout the day should be making me laugh too. And I think you need a rant buddy, like a serious, this is full on, unadulterated, this is me at my most vulnerable, just letting the steam out, because we are in a pandemic. So I think that you need to eat well, take care of yourselves. I listen to Windspeaker Radio all day. Phased Out is my ultimate podcast. DJ Acid Wash keeps finding the music that I feel like I'm standing in a cathedral with the music that he is finding. And he finds these independent and alternative and unheard of bands, certainly that I've never heard of before. And I'm buying the music. So if I fall in love with something, I will go on iTunes. And I write to him all the time, like, dude, what was the song at 14 minutes and 27 seconds in episode 92? And he's like, I don't know. And right. Go, you research it. You've got time. So it's become my passion to buy at least one and support one artist, buy the album, buy the song. Some of these are just EPs. These bands are just starting. And I find that Phased Out, and I find that the remake of War of the Worlds every Wednesday on CBC Gems is terrifying. And I'm so sad that I finished watching the first season. I don't know what to do with myself next Wednesday, because every Wednesday is a new comic book day. And B, War of the Worlds remake. So I've got to find a new series. So I think that many of us are watching our comfort shows. So I'm rewatching Ozark and Friends from College and Love and Easy on Netflix. And the first 20 minutes of the Transformer movie with Megan Fox, because it's incredible. And anyways, I'm writing every day. And my boy, Edzazi, is in forest school for grade one. So he's in the bush 4 days a week. And we join him. That means that we are in the forest 4 days a week. I'm more in tune with the time. So I get up at 4 or 5 to get all my writing done. And then, but I know that the moon rises at 3:30 today, because I live to see the moon. I live to see the stars, and I'm going to bed a lot earlier. I think I'm sleeping a lot more than I ever have. And I'm sleeping my way through this pandemic, which is great for my wife, because I'm an extrovert. She's an introvert. So when I fall asleep with my boy at around 8:30 or 9, she has 2 hours where nobody, I think when you're a mom, you're being pecked to death by ducks all day. Do you know what I mean? Especially with a needy husband like myself. She basically has two boys. So when her wolves are fast asleep, it's really mommy's time. And I'm really glad that she has that. So every morning I wake up, I'm like, baby, I'm so sorry I fell asleep. We got to watch the end of Trickster. We got 2 more episodes. She goes, sweetie, it's okay. She's knitting. She's sewing. She's darning. She's listening to her podcast. She's watching The Crown. Do you know what I mean? She's obsessed. It used to be Outlander. Now it's The Crown. So the greatest gift I think you can give a mom is time alone. Anyway,
I agree 100% with that. Hey. I fight for alone time so much. You need to reset, right? Because if you don't reset, then you're giving to your children from an empty cup, right?
Yeah, you got to fill your own love cup.
Yep. Your kids deserve the best version of yourself. So alone time. Yes.
Tanya, can you in the comments below our podcast, can you list your favorite sex positive comics and I'll do the same? Like, have you read Safe Sex or have you read Unnatural? Oh, you got it? Okay. You got the trade? Okay. I've got a whole bunch of them. Yeah. So yes. I think, you know, what I feel for people in the community is because they don't have access to a comic shop or they don't have access to even the knowledge of where to begin, that there's such great writing and beautiful art that's happening right now and in the industry. And anyways, it really is an exciting time, right? And if you're a comic book creator, I mean, you should be writing your experience. Like, did you read Ariel Schrag's Potential?
No.
No, great.
Potential, so it's Ariel, called? Is it?
Yeah, Potential. It's really hard to find, but Ariel was 14. Ariel didn't know who or what Ariel is or was and decided to document Ariel's life for 1 year and documented the rage and the ecstasy and the partying and awkward makeout sessions and getting stoned. And then through this beautiful book, it's a huge book because it's really an illustrated diary of a 14-year-old. And it's on Ariel's website that Ariel's dad found out that Ariel wasn't a virgin at Ariel's book launch. And it's the one book I think it saves lives. I think it empowers lives. I think Sophie Campbell is doing incredible stuff with Wet Moon and the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm really proud of Sophie. I think Sophie is just doing such incredible stuff. So when I first discovered Sophie was Ross Campbell, and Ross was doing such incredible comic books, and it was just body positive. Everybody was just thick and juicy, and the lips and the eyes, and I was just great. And then all of a sudden, Ross went away, and then suddenly it was Sophie Campbell. And I was like, but this is the same artist, the same art. And I was like, oh, Sophie, Ross transitioned, right? And it's just incredible artwork. And I think it's life-saving. And my hope for, you know, safe spaces for youth in the communities is that they have access to this beautiful literature that is illuminating and uplifting and encouraging and freeing. If that makes sense. So let's do the list. We're going to do the list.
We can do the list. Yeah, comic books.
Let's do the list.
That's
excited for this list. I'm going comic book shopping. Well, I shouldn't say comic book shopping tonight. I have to go manga shopping tonight for my husband and for Christmas or like holidays.
Get some hentai stuff?
No, he's asked for some like really rare like manga that he can't even find online. So there is a shop on Granville Street. I think it's called Golden something.
Golden Age Collectibles.
So I'm going to go there because every week they get new comics, manga, graphic novels in. So I'm going to go there and walk down there and get out of the house because like I rarely leave my apartment so because of COVID. So get out of the house and go for a walk down there and see if I can find this manga that he has asked for, which he has never read a manga before. But all of a sudden it was like, I want this for Christmas. So yeah. But I am actually kind of excited to go there because I might pick up some stuff for myself. Instead of just watching TV every night, might start reading graphic novels again. So
do it up. You can pick from the list that we make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Richard, can we ask you some questions here?
Sure. Whatever you want.
Can I start? I know you've done lots of storytelling for different events and things like that. My question for you is we talk a lot in our podcast about protocol surrounding specific stories, like what you can do if there is specific protocol. Would you be able to comment a little bit about that?
Sure. I think I was just saying to another presentation that as a writer, I think they say every poet is a thief. And I think that there's something to that we're all writing from a place of wonder or maybe trauma or pain or a wish for change. And I think that they're really often is very little expectations on an author's part to reciprocate and honor community and storytellers and elders. But as a storyteller, every time I take the stage, I go prepared in the story that I'm going to tell. I know that I have permission to share it. I have paid the storyteller. I have honored the storyteller with gifts. Often I have cooked for this storyteller, and my payment to them and my debt to the storytellers that I honor and pass on their knowledge and sharings and stories, I am indebted to them for life. So when I get up and I tell a story about from Henry and Eileen Beaver from my community. We've cooked for them. I have moose ribs downstairs when they come back. I have more books from the Northwest Territories from our community that have just come out that are waiting for them. So because they have shared, I mean, Eileen Beaver was babysitting me when I was 13 months old. She has known me my entire life. So anytime, and I pay them all the time for permission to tell and retell their stories. So I have a new book coming out with the University of Regina Press called Gather on Storytelling. And every person in that is honored, from Thompson Highway to Pauline Clark in South Bay to the late Glenn Douglas, who was an Okanagan elder, every single storyteller signed a contract with me and the publisher, giving us permission to share. They've all been paid. And equally important, they've all been gifted. And so they all receive copies of the books. That's not a problem. It'll be out in the summer. So when you get up as a storyteller, I think that you always have to be prepared for someone to stand up and say, who gave you the right to tell that story? And you're always stronger when you say, well, actually, I was just on the phone with Eileen Beaver. She knows I'm sharing the story. She said I could share the story for this event. And here's her number if you want to call her. Or I had somebody say the other day, why are you including Uncle's story in the free book that you always email to people, Tracking Heaven? So I've been collecting elder stories. I was the handy bus driver in my community for a while, and I ended up recording my elders. I just realized that nobody was recording our elders. Nobody was doing it. And I think it's human nature that we just take our own family members and our aunties and our matriarchs for granted, because we always think they're going to be here forever. And when I was probably 21 or 22, I bought a little $21 Radio Shack tape recorder, and I started recording Irene Sanderson, Seraphine Evans, Maria Brown, Amelia Gaitrix, Helena Mandeville. And thank goodness I did, because once I recorded them, I, with their permission, of course, I paid them, and then I transcribed their stories and I gave them back to them with portraits. Remember a long time ago when you had to take pictures, and then the Wally's Drugs would send it down to Edmonton. You get your pictures back 2 weeks later, and then only 3 of them out of 24 were good. Well, I was really lucky to take the portraits that I did. And I've since started converting those little cassette tapes to MP4, and I've started emailing those stories to family, because I always say, you know, Christmas is coming. We don't need more stuff. We need more stories. We need more songs. We need more recipes. We need more prayers, more chants, more names, more techniques for gardening or darning or weaving or knitting or sewing or moose hair tufting or cooking. How do you make moose nose soup, Uncle? That's what I want to know how to do, right? How do you use every part of the fill in the blank? That's what I want to know. So I have recordings of my grandparents, Pierre and Melanie Washee, who didn't speak any English, probably from the early 90s. And for Christmas, what I want to do is I want to convert all those recordings to MP4s. And I want to, for our little boy, to say, these are your great grandparents, and just have it on. We have got a little wireless speaker. Let's just eat and listen to them talk, and how they laugh and tease each other. I don't understand. I'm certainly not fluent in Tlecho. I've got the functional basics, right? But just bring their beautiful spirits back for a little while. That's really what I'm interested in. That's really what I crave, is being able to record stories for myself, but for my community, for my nation, and certainly for future generations. And I love it when, right now, if I send a recording of, let's say, Irene Sanderson, most wonderful Bush Cree elder, she kicked a black bear in the bum for trying to steal its fish. I have that on recording, the interview of, she was born in a boat, right? And just the stories of how fast she could trap, or she could skin, or she could sew. She saved a relation's leg. He was going to lose his leg because he had diabetes, and she used beaver casters. She operated on him using beaver casters, and she saved his leg. To this day, he walks, no cane. They were going to amputate his leg. So to interview a matriarch like Irene Sanderson or Seraphine Evans or Amelia Gaitrix, it is my greatest joy. It makes my heart dance to think that these MP4s that I'm sending to their relations or their sons or their great-grandchildren now, to know that it's not mine, it's yours. It was never mine. I'm just a recorder. I'm just a transcriber. I'm just somebody who's in the right place at the right time. We thought we should probably record these wonderful beings because they're not going to be here forever. Thank goodness I did, because, you know, you've heard the saying that when an elder passes, a library closes. When an elder passes, a library closes. And I actually think so many of our nations are three fluent speakers away from scrambling, trying to jigsaw your language back. And we keep assuming that they're always going to be here. And thank goodness when in our communities, they're still here. There's going to be a time. And I always wonder, who's next? Who are the next matriarchs in line that carry that knowledge and the language and the teachings? Because that's who I want to be with. And that's how I want to spend my life, is really honoring them, being somebody who's trusted in the community that, you know, we're going to bring in Richard Van Camp. We're going to get him to record 10 people. These are the people that have been chosen by the community. That makes me so happy. And of course, from there comes great feasts, great conversations, great laughter. And anyways, I'm going to tell you a really quick juicy story. Do you know how to say Venus in Cree?
No.
No.
Oginans. Oginans.
Oginans.
Oginans. Oginans. Means leader star. Oginans, yeah. So I was in Fort McKay, and the late Flora Grand Jam was there. She was in her 90s, and I worked on a little book with George Littlechild, and it's called Our Stories Help the Northern Lights Dance. And we were asked to go in, and I was asked to record the elders and write one story that honored Fort Chip and Fort McKay and just the change that the elders have seen. Now, this, you can't find this book anymore. It was given, it's gone. I get asked about it all the time. I have one copy left because it was illustrated by the students and the grandchildren of everyone that we interviewed. And George Littlechild did such a great job as a mentor. But one day I was visiting Flora Grand Jam, the late Flora Grand Jam of Fort McKay. And thank goodness I took her portrait. Thank goodness I made a video. And she gave me everything I needed for the book. And she kept, I mean, she served me, I think, this cake and the bannock and then coffee and then tea and then Labrador tea. And she was in her 90s, and she just kept getting up and sitting down and getting up and sitting down and serving me. You know, where I'm from, we serve our elders. She said, oh, no, you've come such a great way. You're an honored guest. Let me spoil you. Let me feed you. Please have more, have more. And so after a while, I was full. I couldn't eat another anything. I couldn't sip another anything. I was so full, and I could see Venus rising over the frozen lake outside of Fort McKay. And I said to Flora, I said, well, Auntie, I said, I thank you so much for having me here. But look, I should probably get going because Venus is rising and you probably have to get ready for supper. And she said, Venus? And I said, yes, Venus. She goes, that's not Venus. That's Oginans. And I said, Oginans. She goes, good. That means leader star. Leader star. I said, oh, that's so beautiful. And I'd never forgotten that. And then her daughter came in and she said, Mom, the doctor says he can see you. You don't have to wait till Monday. He can see you right now, but we got to go right now. And so she says, okay. So they started speaking Cree. And I could tell they were talking about me. I could tell the daughter was saying, well, who in the heck's that funny looking guy sitting in the corner getting his parka on? And I said, hey, I said, what's this? Are you two gossiping about me? And so her daughter came towards me and she says, oh, no, we're not gossiping about you. My mom was just saying that she's so happy the new priest came to visit her first. And I said, new priest? She goes, well, aren't you the new priest? I said, no, I'm Richard Van Camp. She goes, who's that? I said, I've been asked by the band to come here and honor your mother and record her and take her portrait and take videos of her talking so we can put it in a book. And she goes, you know, maybe my mom doesn't need to know that you're not the new priest. I'm just going to let her think you're the new priest. Yeah, we have to go. And I said, yeah, no problem. But I just thought that was so cute that the reason I was getting the royal treatment wasn't because I was an author and anything else. She thought I was the new priest. I think that's great. I'm so grateful I recorded her and got those videos and took her portrait. And every time that, of course, I see Venus, which is every morning, I say, Oginans. I don't even know how to say it in Tlicho. I don't want to learn how to say it in Tlicho. I want that memory of Flora Grand Jam, the late and great Flora Grand Jam, sharing that with me. Gee, that was 20 minutes. I apologize. That was
no,
very
that long. that was a lovely story.
I
that
blew
was
it.
Lovely. No, you didn't.
A lot of hot air. Come on.
Oh, stop. No, that was literally a lovely story. Yeah.
Right, you're all emotionally exhausted. You said you had a number of questions, or did I blow it? You said, cut this guy. You're all texting each other. Enough.
No.
With Richie Van Chump. We had it with this guy. Says it has been. Richie Van Chimp.
So I'm trying to think and formulate a question because I have heard you tell a couple of stories about supernatural things like zombies and aliens, and that is right up my alley. I love those stories. In fact, like my PhD dissertation is about ghosts and tricksters and things like that. So I was hoping, I don't have a question formulated, but if you could just talk about like your supernatural stories or how they kind of come about and how you like to tell them, maybe. I don't know.
I'll tell you a story. This is a story that wants to be told. I knew I was going to share this with you before we began. And I think that there are so many things that are just meant to be in this world and in our lives. And I can prove it. This is a story that just shows that what's meant to be is meant to be. So our family in the Northwest Territories, we've got this bizarre, wonderful tradition of New Year's on Boxing Day. We would go, or New Year's, depending on how cold it was and how brave we were, we would run down to Judith Drinnen's bookshop. It's called the Yellowknife Bookseller. Judith Drinnen has been running the North's independent bookselling only bookseller for 41 years. It's the most beautiful bookstore in Yellowknife, and she's a dear friend. And we would go, and my mom and I, and I think my brothers have even taken part in this a few times, you got to buy a new book. That's the deal. It's Boxing Day or it's New Year's Day. Here's $50. Go get a hardcover, whether it's Thomas Harris or Pat Conroy or Eden Robinson. You got to go and you got to buy it. And it's just to keep you warm for the winter months ahead. I can't explain it. We've been doing this since time immemorial. Anyways, so I go there years ago and I walk into the Yellowknife bookseller. This is when it was in the Panda 2 Mall. This is when Judith Drinnen had two stores. So now it's only in the Scotia Mall in Yellowknife. So I walked into the Panda 2 and it was freezing. I remember it was so cold, but I made it. I beetled my way from my mom's house down to the parking lot, and I go into Judith's shop. I'm like, hello, Judith. And she's like, hello, Richard. Oh, you're here to buy your book? I said, oh, yes. I'm going to find the one book that's going to warm my heart. And as I was walking down the aisle in the Yellowknife bookseller, all the books that she had were spine out. But there was one book that I walked by, and it glimmered. It shone. It flickered. And it was almost like I was playing a video game and there was a side quest, you know, the one brick in Dragon's Lair, right, that you're supposed to stumble upon. And I looked and I could see the publishing logo, and it was Press Gang. And Press Gang Publishers in Canada was, and it will always be, one of the most innovative publishers of all time. So they published Larissa Lai, Lee Miracle, Christos. And as soon as you see Press Gang, you know it's going to be unlike anything you've ever read before, ever. And I go, oh, cool. And it said, Where the Rivers Join by Becky Lane. Becky Lane was one word, and it was capital B. And it creeped me out. Becky Lane. What an odd name. And I took this little book, and the book is really just, it's a whispering brook. It's a picture of a whispering brook. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I opened it up and I was immediately sickened. I was filled with revulsion, because Where the Rivers Join is about a young girl's account of being indoctrinated into ritual abuse and wanting to leave, knowing that she doesn't want to be there. And it's diary fragments, it's excerpts from things she's written down, it's memories, it's bodies being dragged across a sawdust floor, it's handcuffs, it's chanting, it's just this unholy account. And anyways, I knew I needed it. I knew I needed to take her home and I needed to protect her. And I paid Judith and I beetled back to my mom's house. And I remember my stomach just rolling every couple of days. I don't think I've ever read the entire book, but I would look at it and I would need time to just stomach that people were capable of doing this to children. I didn't want to believe it. I even to this day, it just makes my heart and my spirit so incredibly sad that this book was based on something that Becky Lane created. So I would always take this book. You know, when you're in college and you move 27 times in 3 years and you've got the milk crates, right? The four milk crates of all your favorite books. Becky Lane's Where the Rivers Join would always be in the middle. And my hardcovers, right? My Sandman and my Warlord and, you know, fill in the blank. They would always be protecting Becky Lane in the middle. They would be like muskox, horns out, heads down low, protecting this little girl, this little girl. I had to carry her with me everywhere I went. And that went on for years. And maybe once a year I'd open one page and I'd be filled with that sourness in my gut with what this one book could do. And as luck would have it, as fate would have it, I go to Prince George, and there was something a long time ago called the BC Festival of the Arts. And this was a huge literary festival, spoken word festival. And that was where I met Chris Bowes, Jenna Marie Rogers, Graham Proulx Turner. And so my job as a literary mentor, I had a couple books out by then, was just to mentor the adults in the morning. And then in the afternoon, I got to mentor the teenagers. So the teenagers had all come up from Penticton and Carameas and Peachland and Summerland and Naramata, and they'd all raised their own funds to be there. Now the youth had three rules. Number one is you couldn't drink, you couldn't do drugs, and you couldn't break curfew. That was the rule. And they all signed contracts saying if they did any of that, they would be escorted with a couple of the other chaperones on the 11 o'clock bus back to their homes at their own expense. So here I am, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the mornings with the adults, but it was the afternoons with the teenagers that really I saw beatboxing and spoken word, and no one told them they weren't supposed to be writing about the things that they were doing. And we were on fire. And every night there'd be this open mic, and it was the teenagers that were just knocking the adults on their asses, because the talent, the bravery, the courage they had earned, they stood and they delivered. And I was in awe. So things are going great until Thursday night happened. So I'm in my room. It's after a full day. So I'm moisturizing, I'm flossing, I'm getting ready to meditate. I'm going to get down to theta. I'm going to touch center. You know what I mean? Things are looking good. I got my Iron Maiden Power Slave t-shirt, my favorite t-shirt. I got my little Nike sweatpants so I could be comfy. And I'm just getting ready to settle in for that. I've got a regime. And I'm just winding down. And then all of a sudden, bang, 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 bang. And I'm like, what? What is, you know, I'm a Virgo. We hate to be surprised. So I answer the door, and it's Graham Proulx Turner, who was in my workshop as an adult, but he was also the head chaperone for the youth. He's like, Richard. I'm like, what? He goes, the kids all snuck out. They're drinking. They're doing drugs. They're at a house. We got to go get them. They called me. They're scared because gang leaders and members have showed up. They don't want to be there anymore. And we got to go. Come on, get dressed. And I'm like, no. You obviously have me confused with somebody who could do something, because these little arms, these are math arms. These are good for doing equations and paying taxes. Okay. And maybe writing the occasional book. I'm not going. He goes, no. You're the only person I can count on. Come on, you are the BC Festival of the Arts literary mentor, and you got to come, because they don't even listen to me. They're going to listen to you. They respect you. Let's go. I'm like, all right. So I get dressed. We get in this tiny little car. We drive way out of Prince George. And I remember someone had taken a 12-gauge to the stop signs and the street lights. And I remember there was a fire truck on blocks of wood. Someone had stolen the tires to the fire truck. And I was like, okay, this is not good. I really don't want to be here. Because civilization is back there. Prince George is back there. The cops there are there. All hospitals there. Jails are back there. Society is back. Rules are back there. And I felt like we were just heading out to the Badlands. And sure enough, we go around this corner and he goes, that's the house. And there were 16 paddy wagons with the cherries on. They were surrounding this house. And we go into this house and this police officer is yelling at 48 teenagers, some of whom were wearing gang jackets. And the police officer is like, the next time we knock on a door and yell, police, everybody come out. Don't all 48 of you run up the stairs. We could hear you guys trying to get away. If I got to come back here, you're all spending tonight in the drunk tank. That's that. Go home, people. Go home. And so everybody's getting their shoes on. And Graham's there. I'm there. And he's like, okay, PIB, come on, everybody. Let's go. Penticton Indian Band. Let's go together. So everybody takes off. The police take off. And Graham goes, I don't know what to tell you. You all broke curfew. Yep. I hate to say it. You're all on the 11 o'clock tonight. Guys, we had three rules. You broke all of them. And anyways, I'm glad you're safe, but I've got to go get Marlena and the big white van, because you're not all going to fit in the car. So Richard, you stay here with the kids and we'll be back in about 10 minutes. I'm like, what? I'm sorry, what? I'm here with the kids next to a farmhouse in the middle of somewhere in the middle of Planet of the Apes land. I don't want to be here. So he's like, no, I got to go. I got to get Marlena. I'll be right back. So he gets in his car and he's gone. And I'm standing there with about, I don't know, 12 teenagers. And one of them goes, wait a minute. Why don't we run back to Prince George and pretend it wasn't us? Everyone just hop in the shower, get the makeup off, the perfume, brush your teeth. And then when they come to get us, just go, what? That wasn't me. I've been sleeping. What? Anyways, and I was like, guys, I'm right here. And they're like, whatever. And so they all took off. They're like, yeah, let's do it. So they took off. So I was the only guy standing outside of this party house. And then three gang members rolled out of the ditches and surrounded me and proceeded to start pushing me around. And they're like, are you the narc that called the cops? That's the narc that called the cops. He's the narc. I'm like, I'm no narc. I know the rules, boys. Snitches get stitches. I know the rules. And I have a yellow belt in Taekwondo. And that's when I realized all those little precious katas, itch, knee, soul, rook, meant nothing. They were pushing me. I was a human ping pong ball. They're pushing me back and forth. It's getting brutal. They're getting meaner. They get braver. And then one of the young ladies who was about 14 saw what was happening, turned around, spun on her heel, raced and pushed with everything inside of her, the biggest guy right in the chest. And I could still hear the slap of her hands on his chest cavity and his leather jacket. And she pushed him and she went, run, Van Camp, run. And I ran. Oh, baby, I tell you, there is no shame in the fleeing game. I ran. And they were throwing rocks at me. They're racing after me. And I'm running towards the highway. And I'm like, I'm the BC Festival Literary Mentor, right? I'm the BC Festival, right? You're not paying me enough for this. And I see the white van. Marlena and Graham are coming. I jump in the white van. They open the door. Something out of a movie. They open the door. I jump in. And the biggest rock hits the side of the van. And they take off. They're like, Jesus Christ, what was that? What's going on? Where are the kids? I'm like, they're all running back to the city. They're all going to pretend it wasn't them. And they're like, what? That's so grade four. I'm like, I know. Just, there's no point going back there. There's mean people there. Bad people are there. I just want to go home. I need to moisturize and floss. I don't really understand what's happening right now. And Graham's like, I'm so sorry, Richard. We'll just drop you off at the Ramada. Okay, we'll go take care of those kids. Rats. They all got to go on the 11 o'clock tonight. I can't believe it. Okay, Richard, I'll see you later. Okay, I'm like, whatever. I just want to go home. And then I go back to the Ramada, start the whole regime all over again. It's a 12-step process, let's be honest. And then about 40 minutes later, bang, bang, bang. And I'm like, oh, here we go. So Graham Poole Turner walks in. He's like, Richard. I'm like, yeah. He goes, listen, I'm really sorry. Marlena's sorry. Everyone's sorry about the whole thing. The kids are on the 11 with a couple of chaperones. I can't believe it. You know, we only had one more day. They couldn't even contain it. Richard, you know what? I'm so upset right now. I just feel so betrayed. You know, when I get like this, I need darkness, man. I need something really dark to read. Come on, man. I know you're holding. You got any Bret Easton Ellis? You got any Clive Barker or Stephen King or Thomas Harris, man? Or Joyce Carol Oates? You got Zombie? You got Joyce Carol Oates' Zombie? I'm like, no. And he's like, man, I need like the darkest thing. I need the darkest thing. We're back tomorrow, man. Tell me you got a really dark book. I'm like, yeah, I do, actually. And he goes, what is it? You got to lend it to me. I'm like, well, I'll lend it to you, but I don't think you're going to be able to handle it. I'm like, well, he goes, what is it, Richard? Come on, tell me. I'm like, it's called Where the River's Joined by Becky Lane. He goes, what? I said, it's Where the River's Joined by Becky Lane. It's an account of ritual abuse, and it's told by a little girl. And he goes, Richard, Becky Lane is my mom.
Whoa, I was not expecting that.
He says, do you want me to call her? I said, yeah. You want to speak to my mom? I said, yeah. Okay, he says, I'm really sorry about what happened tonight. I'll just call her. Hey, mom. Hey, it's Graham. I'm in Prince George with Richard Van Camp. I'm in his hotel. He says he wants to talk to you. Is that okay? You want to say hi to him? Okay, here he is. I took Graham Poole Turner's phone and I said, hello? And I heard a voice and it said, hi, Richard. I'm Becky Lane. And that's how I met her.
Wow.
Becky Lane became Sharon Pearl Turner. Sharon Pearl Turner was Becky Lane. And Sharon Pearl Turner became a really good friend. And we cooked for her in our home. And actually yesterday, I was reading her book, The Trees Are Still Bending South. And it was published by Kegadon's Press. And I just really wanted to honor Kateri Akawenzi Dam and Renee Abram of Kegadon's Press for publishing all these beautiful poets and all these beautiful authors and everything that they're doing and continue to do. And I'm published with them with Angel Wing Splash Pattern. We got the 20th anniversary edition, just came out last week. But meeting Sharon Pearl Turner and getting to cook for her and getting to travel with her and tour with her. And we lost her several years ago, and we had a big ceremony before she passed where we sang to her, we read her, you know, her poetry, we wrote poetry for her. I was the MC. We got to give away tobacco ties to everybody there. And it was the best send-off I'd ever seen for anyone who knew that their time was close. And, you know, sometimes when you have things and you're given things, there's a time when they're not yours anymore. I was giving a talk at a university, and it just hit me as I was packing that one copy of Where the Rivers Join by Becky Lane wasn't mine, and it wanted to travel. And this was after I met Sharon, of course. I think it was actually after we lost her and she passed on, that I went to the university, and I think it was Freedom to Read Week. I can't remember where I was exactly. And I said, and I told the story of meeting Becky Lane, and I said, this is the book, the one book that I bought a decade ago that has come with me everywhere. And I just don't feel like it's mine anymore. And I feel like it wants to travel. So does everybody want this book? And it is the toughest book you will ever read, or certainly one of them. And I remember in a sea of 180 students and instructors, a young man raised his arms and he stood up. He was a big guy. And he said, I'll take her. I said, okay. And I walked up and I said, this is yours now. And he said, I'll carry Becky Lane home. And he held it. He just cradled this book. And I just thought that was the sweetest thing. And it's a reminder that there's so many good people in the world. There's so many beautiful hearts in the world. And I think that the way that little book flickered was Becky Lane trying to find a way home and a way out. And I think that's the power of literature. I think that's the medicine of her words, and she's still here. I mean, yesterday, just being able to sit and read these beautiful poems again and discover some new ones. And I think that when we lost Sharon Pearl Turner, we were bringing Becky Lane home. She's home now, she's free, and so is Sharon. And I'm in awe of it all. I'm always in awe. So that may be considered supernatural, that may be considered a spirit medicine story, but it's all true. It happened to me, and that miracle happened in Prince George. I tell you, I was getting ready. I thought that was it. I was going to leave toes up, but the creator had a plan and continues to have a plan for me, and I'm grateful.
Yeah. It's a story about destiny. Absolutely. Yep. I love it. I know we're getting pretty late here. Do we have time for one more question, sure. Richard, before we sign off?
Anything you want. Let's party.
Let's party.
So, yeah, you've written, like, that was an amazing story, first of all. Like, that, and, like, you've been telling different stories in a lot of different formats. So, like, graphic novels, short stories, like, novels. Do you approach the writing differently when you know you're going to write in a different format? Or how does that work for you?
Well, there's my publisher, Tanya Martin, with McKellar and Martin. She was an editor and publisher with Scholastic and Raincoast, and now she has her own publishing company, McKellar and Martin, with Megan Haig, and they're in New Westminster, BC. She, as an editor, said that there is an argument that is a longstanding discussion point between editors, that there are two kinds of writers in the world. There are the systematic ones like me that shows up every morning at 5 a.m. I can go for an hour and a half, and I'm responsible for filling my love cup with getting all my writing done for the day. And then after that, I could be the best dad, best husband, best friend, best tax-paying citizen in the whole wide world. But the whole day that I'm with you, I'm actually filtering and getting ready for the real best part of my day, which might be your night alone as a mother. But my craft is really I think, hard won through discipline. It's always showing up. So she said, you're probably the first one, right? You've got the kitchen cards and the notepads and the on your phone and the audio recordings of dialogue, and you hammer it out every day. I'm like, yep. She goes, and then there are the channelers. And then there are the channelers. So the channelers are like Eden Robinson, who will go months without writing and is really hard on herself. And she explained this to the creative writing class. And she just said, you know, she's her own worst critic when she's not writing. She's her own worst critic when she is writing. And she'll go months between Son of a Trickster or Trickster Drift or Blood Sports or Trap Lines or Sasquatch at Home. I'm one of her biggest fans. And I consider her a really, really dear soul and a good friend. But she said it'll be bad perfume on a flight 30,000 feet over the ocean, or it may be a typo in a menu. And all of a sudden when she sees it, it's like being struck by the sweetest lightning, because it is on. And then she is in months in front of her laptop going, print, another book, done. And then she's hard on herself again because she's not writing. But she's a channeler. So to answer your question, I'm really lucky because I think that I've been able to do both, because I've learned the hard way, and I keep learning the hard way, that the story is the boss. Mm-hmm. The story is the boss. So if I get an idea, let's say about elder abuse or about sexual health or about gang violence prevention, Robert Creeley said form should echo content. Form should echo content. So when the content is there, the idea, the inspiration, I have a responsibility to really trust and question, is this a one-page novel? Is this a baby book? Is this a lullaby? Is this a comic book? Is this a graphic novel? Is this a one-page novel? Is this a haiku? Is this a tweet? Is this a meme? Is it a novel? And it's about showing up with a good heart and open arms and open hands, and just being ready to really honor the story that wants to be told. And Lee Miracle, I think I shared this last time, gave me my wings in 91 at the Inaukin Center when she said that the beauty of fiction is you can find in your life what has been stolen, and you can mend in your life what has been broken. You can resurrect the dead with your writing. And I think that's why I write, is to really address the hurt and the hard feelings and the wonder and the curiosity and what could have been and what should have been, when what needed to happen. I can fix the ending of horrible things that have happened in our community or in the city or in my life, but I can fix it in my own Virgo way. And that's the beauty of fiction. I hope that answers your question. But I will say this, 25 books in 25 years, and I will always be a student of the craft. I always show up, same blank page, same Microsoft Word document, and it's always with the trust of a child. It's always, I'm here, I want to do this. Sometimes I see the ending, sometimes it's dialogue, sometimes it's a character, sometimes it's a scar, sometimes it's a tattoo, right? Sometimes it's a smell, and then it's just showing up and trusting. And I'm so lucky to have the publishers and the editors I do. I think I'm a good writer, but I know it's my editors that make me a great, fantastic writer. And I've got beautiful publishers. I'm so proud to work with every single publisher. I'm so proud of all of our books. And these books take time, right? And that's why it's really important to remind people of that, you know, The Lesser Blessed took me 5 years to write. In my new novel, Beast has taken me 7, and then Little You took 2 minutes, right? The key is show up, good heart, open mind, open heart, open spirit, ready to work, ready to honor, ready to cherish, ready to uplift. That's what I love doing, is getting the big nod from a northerner back home, or maybe down where you are, where they go, that's exactly how it is in my family too. That's exactly how it is at our supper table. Or that definitely happens. I love that when someone says, thank you for telling my story. Thank you for telling the story of our community, because we have that here too. I love it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Is it okay? Nobody's mad at me? I don't owe anybody any money?
No.
Nobody. No, it's all good. Thank you so much for sitting with us again.
Cool.
Okay, everybody. I can hear my little boy downstairs. I'm going to go help out mommy. I have to wear a mask. I actually went from a nose swab yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm negative. I know it was inside me. I just had this headache the other day. Oh. And I never get headaches. And I just felt a little achy. And so I'm going to go down and help out mommy. She has so much work to do. You know, it's the one thing about this pandemic is that there's a lot of talk, but I don't see any relief for anyone working. There's we're all, well, I'm not, because I do my own thing. But I see a lot of people who are expected to as the president or as a committee member or as a board member, you still have to rock on, even though one of you is walking around the house with a mask. Or think about somebody who has three jobs and no benefits. Mm-hmm. If they don't work, they don't eat, and they don't pay rent. Of course, mm-hmm. people are going to show up with a sore throat. It's human nature, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, we're lucky. I'm blessed. It's a beautiful day. Moonrise, what time is it?
2:20.
In an hour and 10 minutes, the moon is going to rise, okay? Kalaza and Chipwyan. Kalaza and Chipwyan. Do you all remember how to say Venus?
Remind us again.
Yeah, Oginans. Oginans. So let's work on the sex positive comic list. And I can send you the link so that people can read our comic books for free. Perfect. And I'm just so grateful for your time. So if you ever want to call and you want to do this again, if you're ever bored out of your tree, we should do an erotica, an evening of erotica. We really should. I mean, I hosted Blush.
I would be so down with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get Tennille Campbell and Stephanie and Gregory Schofield. Let's get
Let's get our sexiness on. Yeah.
Get our sexiness. Because that would be great. You know what I mean? Like, how do you survive the pandemic without talking about, beauty and the sensual and wonder? And it would be so fun. It'd be so fun. Also, an evening of ghost stories. Mm-hmm. Or
Yes. Yeah. I have so many Métis ghost stories. It's not even funny.
We need them. Well, especially because it's I don't know if it still is, but it was Métis week. And did I send you the interview I did with our Métis president, Kenny Hudson? I'm going to send you a whole pile of stuff. But
yes.
I got the interview of a lifetime. He was always in trouble when I was the paper boy in Fort Smith. He was always in court, always taking on Wood Buffalo National Park because he knew that the park was lying to the Métis. He knew it. He fought it. And I finally got him with a film crew and a great director, Carla Ulrich. And we got the true story of what really went down and how scared he was as a brand new dad. Nobody wants to go to jail fighting for your rights, but he knew he was being lied to. He knew the people were being lied to. And what he did goes beyond the call of duty as a Métis president. And he's like the Johnny Cash of the South Slave region of the Northwest Territories of Canada. I love that man so much. I'll just send you. You know what? Talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. Can I deliver? I'll deliver. I'm a Virgo. Are you kidding me? Okay, I gotta go do my regime. I gotta do all my right. regime.
Okay. 12 all steps. It's a lot of work. Yes, see ya. Thanks again.
Have fun. Anytime you want to party.